Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the live issues program's post-episode recaps. On live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnis Training proudly present No Borders, No Race, the world's J-pop and alternative hotspot.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your King Baby Duck Evan Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in. I know I rarely ever talk about sports on my show, but I need to send a huge congrats to the Chicago Cubs for winning the World Series. Their first in 108 years. Trust me, I know how painful it can be to wait for a World Series championship. I'm a Bostonian, after all. What you're feeling right now in Chicago is how I was feeling back in 2004 when the Red Sox won our first championship after 86 years of the curse of the Bambino. Thankfully, the Dropkick Murphys recorded a cover of the classic Red Sox fan base theme, Tessie, which helped to break that curse. You guys, on the other hand, had the magic of Bill Murray to break your curse of a goat. You know what? It's all Bill Murray. Bill Murray won the World Series championship. When we look back at history, every single player on that team will be Bill Murray, because Bill Murray is awesome. Congrats to the 2016 roster of the Chicago Cubs. Again, all Bill Murray. And a tip of the hat to the Cleveland Indians for a good fight. All of them Charlie Sheen. 10 innings long. Game was over close to 1 a.m. our time. It felt like something straight out of a sports anime, man. It was that intense. And Cleveland, maybe you'll get that victory next year. I know you've had a drought yourself. Maybe it'll happen next year, so long as you can defeat us Red Sox, you know. Anyways, congrats. Let's get this episode rolling. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these records on cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. Today, we'll be starting off the playlist with a song from my favorite album from Bloodthirsty Butchers, Banging the Drum. The band has been on a hiatus since the 2013 death of frontman Hideki Yoshimura, which still stings the music industry to this very day. Hopefully the rest of the group will come back together in some way or form. From Banging the Drum, this is Bloodthirsty Butchers with B2.
Yeah! 知りたい、分かり合いたい、そう思うのに、でも過ぎ去った過去が僕を取り巻いて、うまく踏み出せないでいる。また同じことを繰り返すみたいで、でも君といると笑ってる僕がいる。不安だけどきっと乗り越えてゆける。君とならし残る歯がゆさ踏み出せば、ほらなんとなる、少し強くなったかな。僕がそばにいたら少しだけ笑ってくれる。頼りないこんな僕でも君といられるように、ずっと笑えるように優しい君の笑顔を希望に変えて、道を照らす僕でずっとありたい。
HY with Da'ai from their 2008 record, Hearty. HY will be hitting the Japanese Road once again this spring, so if you find yourselves in the area, be sure to check out their official website to see if they'll be stopping in a town near you. Despite what some people may think, anime isn't the only form of television I watch. Okay, I view a lot of anime, in fact. I am watching 15 new shows this season alone. But I still also dabble in the live-action realm for some goodies. This past season, I really enjoyed the new shows Better Things and Atlanta on FX, two outstanding comedies that I'm sure a lot of people will be paying close attention to come award season time. There is one new series that just started airing on BBC America that has really grabbed hold of my attention, and that is Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. Based on the book series by Douglas Adams, the same bloke who brought us The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, this particular show is flat-out batshit crazy. starring Samuel Barrett as the title character and Elijah Wood as the reluctant sidekick Todd, the first season is focusing on a strange kidnapping and murder that involves sharks, a woman who thinks she's a dog, a serial killer looking for Dirk, and a boatload of other insane scenarios. Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency is one of those shows that really loses its sanity quickly, going from one what-the-fuck moment to the next. But the way everything is intertwined, be it with its sharp dialogue or fast-paced action, it just drags you into what's happening to Todd's frail and abysmal world. It's one of those shows that makes you say, I have no idea what the fuck is going on, but I'm really curious to see where it's going to take me. And it's not often that I say that about a series outside of the anime realm, but holy shit does this series grab my attention in ways that no other show has this year. It's funny, violent, and incredibly surreal, and it's wonderfully acted by Wood and Barrett, who really bring a sort of balance of sanity and insanity between their two roles. If you haven't checked it out yet, please go into your on-demand service and look up Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency under BBC America. For those living outside of the U.S., the show will be hitting Netflix on December 12th, as it is a co-production between BBC America and Netflix. So hopefully that'll also mean it'll also appear on the American Netflix in the near future. Seriously, give Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency a watch, because it is hugely entertaining. Probably might go down as probably my favorite show of 2016. Now, Rammstein isn't the only band from Germany, despite what the mainstream music industry likes to tell you. From Berlin, this group goes by the name The History of Color TV, and they'll be releasing their third album, Something Like Eternity, which is a really good album. I was listening to it the other day. It comes out on November 25th. This is the lead single from the album, and it is called Wreck.
Yeah.
From their iconic 1999 album, Jet Generation, that was Guitar Wolf with Cyborg Kids. They, of course, released a new album this year called T-Rex from a Tiny Space Yuuzhan, and recently finished another U.S. tour. In the anime realm, you often come across a series that looks like it's going to be complete shit. And often, when a series looks like shit, it winds up being shit. However, there are those rare instances where a show that looks like it's going to be really bad winds up actually being pretty great. Last year we saw that with Monster Musume, and then the previous year it occurred with Toei's parody show, Robot Girl Z. This year, it seems like the award for show that should have sucked but wound up being good is more likely to go to this season's Keijo. Yes, it's the anime about a sport involving boobs and butts, and it in no way shies away from the fact that it's about boobs and butts. But how they take this sport so seriously in this show is what I think makes Keijo work the way it does. It's absolutely fanservice-y, and I will in no means deny that it isn't. But fanservice can lead to great things when done right, hence why I've rated things like Senran Kagura and Galgun so highly, because while it can be perverted, they're still fun and fulfilling experiences. Hence why I like how they handled something like Keijo. The characters of Nozomi, Miyata, Hanabi, and the rest of the trainees want to be a part of the sport. They're not being forced to do it by some sweaty fat dude with a camera and a tardy hard-on, like, you know, some hentai might have in it. They generally love this crazy-ass sport, and are working hard to be the best in it. Yes, the exercises are focused on boob and butt aerobics with those nice little close-up shots, but how they treat them is done in such a tongue-in-cheek way. Your face cheek, not your butt cheek. Like, it's the real deal. It reminds me of why I loved the film adaptation of Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. It worked because the film treated the spectacle as that. And like crazy vampires being killed by a 16th president is presented in such a serious light in that film, Keijo is, as such, being treated as a serious sport. And when the actual matches occur, it's really funny, but it's also very exciting, especially when you've got like moves like the titty hypnosis and vacuum butt cannon, when you see those in motion, and I really like how it's handled. They make it exciting, but not in a perverted kind of way. They make it exciting from a sports spectacle sort of motion, you know what I mean? But please don't take my word for it. Until, of course, I write a more thorough review on the Boston Bash Brigade site. You can watch Keijo on Crunchyroll, and it has been licensed by Funimation, and I think the broadcast dub has already started. Fingers crossed, seriously, fingers crossed as of right now, that it gets a video game adaptation. On PS4, with VR capabilities. Sue me, I like to have some fanservice film fun once in a while. And in the murder words of Homer J. Simpson, if you don't like it, go to Russia. Here's a band I haven't played in a real long time. It's My Way, My Love, and from their 2015 album, Shit! With an exclamation point. This is Let It Die, Ride! We'll be right back. our northern Canadian neighbors chore with Electrojet. From their final album, The Coastal Line Fire, originally released in 2002, but getting the special edition treatment on November 18th. This re-release will feature 5 never-before-heard tracks, 3 originals, and 2 covers originally performed by Depeche Mode and Robert Pollard. The power of pixels can be sometimes overwhelming. Even a video game that looks very old school can harbor feelings, especially ones filled with dread and fright. A good example of this would be Superfly Games' Lone Survivor, which a lot of people consider to be a great homage to Silent Hill, despite it looking like a retro video game. However, the true master of taking an old-looking title and managing to freak you out at times has to be Corpse Party, which just got re-released on the 3DS by XE Games to celebrate its 20th anniversary. I've recently just started playing this game, but the way Corpse Party makes you feel is very unnerving. Considering it's a portable title, being able to pull off an emotion like that is kinda impressive. I've currently only played the first chapter of the game, which focuses on Naomi and Seiko, and what occurs in this chapter alone gave me the chills. Like, it really creeped me out and knotted my stomach. Maybe it's because it's, you know, the sight of cute characters being put through horrible shit. It kind of gives me an unsettling feeling, but either way, how the writers of this game managed to pull this off in a title that looks mostly like a Super Nintendo RPG just goes to show you how good they are at getting you to feel something for these characters. Like I said, I just started playing, and while I somewhat know what to expect thanks to seeing a few clips of the Corpse Party OVAs, what I've gone through as of this recording is just simply astounding. This game is 2 decades old, and yet it still feels just as fresh as when it first arrived on the gaming scene. You know, it's kind of funny that I'm talking about another game's 20th anniversary after doing my piece on Duke Nukem 3D's 20th, but that time period was a true rebirthing moment for the digital arts. And if you've never played Corpse Party, please do yourselves a favor and give it a whirl. If you don't have a 3DS, you can also get it on iOS, PC, and if you want to go back just a little ways off, PlayStation Portable. Any way you can. You gotta check this game out. It's very impressive. Right now, we're gonna spin a track from Casablanca, which features Sawao Yamanaka of The Pillows, Yoko of Noodles, and Shinya Kusabe of Radio Caroline. From another story, this is Greeting Song.
You can cross, you can cross.
Joint 7 with Fat Man Blues from their 2008 mini album Third Star from the Earth. Currently, their drummer Miyoko Yamaguchi can be seen pounding away for Puffy and Bim Bam Boom, the latter of which released their debut album Tiger Roll this past June. The Marvel Cinematic Universe continues to invade theaters everywhere with the latest film, Doctor Strange, starring Benedict Cumberbatch, Tilda Swinton, and Rachel McAdams. And today we're joined by a killer roundtable to discuss this film. First and foremost, he is the co-host of Another Retro Gaming Podcast and a writer for Maruno's Rock, WWG, and Ops Head, the George Clooney of video games, the DCD Robert Workman.
Dr. Workman, thank you.
All right, fine, Dr. Workman.
And also not with Opset anymore, but thank you for thinking of me. But yes, hi, everybody. Another great Marvel movie out. Gotta love it.
Yep. And lastly, together, these two are the chiptune concocting beasts known as Bright Primate, but they've also dabbled with the video game realm from time to time. One of them is putting the finishing touches on the hotly anticipated Rain World for PC, Mac, and PS4. The other is composing the score for various titles, including the upcoming Infinite Oasis. The Mordecai and Rigby of the geekery realm, James and Lydia Primate.
Hello. Ace intro all the way around.
Thank you very much. So, guys, Doctor Strange. First thoughts.
Ooh,
yes. Yeah. Woo. Yes.
That's the movie with the trolls, right? Yeah, that was a great movie. Timberlake was on point. Boy, yeah, he was good.
Now, first off, who has actually read the original Doctor Strange comics?
Not us.
No.
I read a little bit. I'm not a diehard fan, but I read a little bit to kind of get some background going into the movie.
Okay, so for what you know, how close was this to the actual origin story from the comics?
You know what? I know they had to change a few things around to fit it into a 2-hour time frame.
Yeah.
But I think they did a good job introducing, like, you know, his character and everything like that, how much he changes when he goes to, you know, visit the ancient one and right in there. And forget the name of the location. I was gonna say Kathmandu, but that's not it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I really think it did very well.
That is Kermitage.
Sorry. Yeah, that's it. Sorry.
Kermitage.
Sorry about that.
Yes.
But no, yeah, I mean, it definitely did a good job, I think, setting it up. I know some people are probably going to question how some things got left out or what happened with Mordo. Well, we'll get to that in a bit. But right. I think for the most part, it definitely stayed true to the tone. And, you know, a lot of people were questioning at first, can Cumberbatch fill the role?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, when he had that facial hair thing going on, it almost looked just like the comic book version.
Yeah, pretty much.
It did. Mm-hmm.
And but he just looked great. He looked great in the role. Like with the face and everything.
He did a good voice too. He did like this monotone American accent and everything like that. And we didn't think he was gonna pull it off, and he actually wasn't bad.
Yeah, it's like the complete opposite of what happens when an American tries to do a British accent. It's always like, "Oh, governor, would you like me to be swiping up your chimney here?"
He will become one himself. But you know what? If we think about it, there's always been like initial doubts of somebody taking over a role. When Robert Downey Jr. was initially announced as Iron Man, there were some people that had doubts, like him, the dude on drugs. He's not going to get this role. And now, what has he become? One of the most beloved actors in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
He basically, it's like when he's is added Iron
a movie,
Man.
It's gold. Exactly. And I think, you know. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, so speaking of casting, I thought Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One was, like, amazing.
She was awesome.
Yeah.
And I know there was, there was a lot of, like, there's, like, whitewashing claims at the beginning.
Know.
Which I think, which is valid, but I think for her part specifically, like, she was amazing. And she made the whole first half of the movie, in my opinion.
I was reading online that the reason why that they went with Tilda Swinton and not someone of Asian descent was because the original character was very rich in like the Pai Mai like stereotypes, and they were trying to keep away from that sort of thing. So that's why.
Yeah, I think it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, it is a double-edged sword.
She did a fine job. I mean, you know, and you have to understand, like, some of these comics, they change things around to make certain characters work. Like, wasn't Carl Mordo initially a white character?
What?
And he was played by Chiwetel Ejiofor. I don't know if I'm saying it right. The guy from Serenity. And I thought he was great. But yeah, what happened was, according to this, Scott Derrickson, the guy who directed the film, was confident that the decision to cast him as Mordo and thus changing character from white to black was the right one to make. So his character was changed too, but he didn't get much flack. You know, it's sort of like when they changed, you know, the Human Torch to a black character in the new Fantastic Four. and it ended up being shit, but still, it was shit for different reasons, not because
that wasn't
of his
Michael class. B. Jordan's. Yeah, Michael B. Jordan's amazing. But.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan's a fantastic actor. He was just miscast in this role, or rather, was
oh,
one of
those
guys.
Was miscast. The movie. Let's not digress ourselves. But yeah,
you know, a movie is going to be bad when they do the press junket at San Diego Comic Con and they're not really excited about it.
I'm just saying, a lot of people get flack when it comes to casting choices. You know, Tilda Swinton is the ancient one, Ejiofor as Mordo. But you have to understand, I mean, that's common. When Ben Affleck was announced as the Batman, everybody's like, "Well, this is gonna be shit. This is gonna be terrible. This is gonna be
it's gonna be Daredevil all over again."
Internet is good at that. They like to take this weird casting decision and just poop all over it. You know, there are probably people that were critical of Cumberbatch too, if I recall correctly.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And now everybody loves it. Like, it's 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. The same people that were like, "Oh, up in arms about it," are like, "Oh yeah, this is great."
You know, they're probably 10% that actually like Fantastic Four, so whatever with them.
Well, we should discuss the actual Asian character in the movie, Wong, who I thought was really great.
Oh my god, Benedict Wong was fantastic.
His name is Benedict Wong. Yeah, I love how there are two Benedicts in this movie.
Well, his name is really B.D. Wong, but I guess on the casting page, it was Benedict Wong. Because he was B.D. Wong in movies like The Martian and earlier works like that, so I guess they change it to be like, we have two Benedicts. Eggs Benedict. Yes.
They have the rare opportunity to bust out two Benedicts. You might as well, right?
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And I did like the character. He starts out as this little somber, take note, you know, guy is taken absolutely seriously. And then as the movie progresses, he starts to get a little bit easy on himself. And he finally gets that good laugh at the end.
That
was one of the big laughs of the movie. Yeah.
I think this... The scene I really liked, and I know that obviously we're going to warn about spoilers anyway, but spoilers, where he's sitting in the library and Doc's just using these portals to grab all these books and he's freaking him out. What's going on?
While he's listening, oh, no, little sea layers, put your hands on it, put a ring on it, whatever.
Yeah, some Beyonce. Beyonce, oh my god. The whole Beyonce mention, I was like, oh god.
I felt like it did such a good job of keeping that tone, like that Fantastic Four-ish. It was like, it does all the things that it needs to do to be an action movie and be like exciting, but also it's just goofy and it doesn't...
Yeah, it was funny.
Didn't take itself too seriously, because it's ridiculous. It's like dumb stuff.
Right.
But, it had the Guardians of the Galaxy style vibe in terms of the source material, but having fun with it. I mean, it wasn't as fun as Guardians, but it definitely had its moments of just like, you can't help but grin at this sort of...
It's one of those movies that it doesn't forget its comic book origins. This is why I love the Marvel film series so much, is because it feels like you are legit watching a live action comic book happening. Whereas with like the DC universe, and when they sometimes get it right, they get it right. But with the DC universe, they sometimes like to do this whole aspect of comic book people in the real world instead of real world in a comic book. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
seriously. And like everything has those Alan Moore overtones where it's like, we're gritty and realistic. And it's like, well, kind of. I don't know.
Not every superhero works in that context, though.
So yeah.
Right.
It depends on which one you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I think if there was any weakness with the casting, it seems to be an ongoing problem with some Marvel movies. The villain, Mads Mikkelsen.
Yes, totally.
I mean, he had the whole, you know, Tammy Faye Baker makeup job. And, and just the way his tale came to a conclusion, I was like...
It was very...
That's it?
Yeah.
It was great. When he was battling them in the mirror world, I thought that was fantastic.
Oh my god! Can we talk about the
great? We'll get to that.
Yeah, all right.
We'll talk to the cast first, and then we'll get to the that stuff, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I was a little bit disappointed that he didn't show more of his personality. You know, there was this great moment where he's facing off with Doctor Strange while he was locked up and everything like that, and I really thought we were going to get deeper into him, and then eventually he's just running around most of the movie.
Like me personally, I would have liked to have seen more of his backstory. Story in motion, that rather in like monologue motion.
Why did he leave Karma? Why?
Right, we needed some flashbacks. I think that would have helped.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, he's vaguely, he's like almost a sympathetic character. You know, when Strange has him locked up in that bizarre contraption, like you almost get a sense of like, oh, you know, here's a person who was led astray and they had these deep convictions about what they should be learning through this magical nonsense. But we never really get the stakes of that. I feel like that was really carried through too to like the big reveal at the end where the ancient one like is drawing power from the dark dimension. You're like, okay, who cares? Like, fine.
But right. At least he's using the darkness for good.
Not to mention, was positioned as the big, like, oh.
And you're like, I know. I mean, not to mention, we didn't see enough of Dormammu. I mean, he was supposed to be the big bad in this movie and all. Yeah. But I mean, it reminded me in a way of, you know, Fantastic Four: Rise of the Silver Surfer, when you find out, like, you know, that big enemy is just a head or something. You know, it's. I mean, he did okay. I liked his battles with Doctor Strange in the end. I thought that was cool. But I was just kind of expecting. I mean, you've seen the character in Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3. Dormammu is this big, vicious thing with, like, flaming hands and, like, a whole demon presence and everything like that. The movie version didn't kind of reflect that. It was just this large demonic head.
Right. I didn't have, like, the Super Smash Brothers hands with him, too.
Right. Just, you know, like, I mean, the fact that he had a battle where he killed Doctor Strange over and over again, who's like, what is this? Come on!
Stop! Alright! Come on! I don't want this to go on forever! Ah!
But I do like how the movie set up with Mordo with the final scene. Mm. I thought that was really well done, and if they bring him back, I think he is going to be a great villain.
I do believe that they're supposed to be bringing him back either during Infinity War, or I think he might be coming back in some way in Ragnarok.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great to see him show up, because I know, like, Thor was at the end too, so I know somehow that'll cross over. But it'd be great to see him, like, working with Thanos to help him get together the Infinity Stones. Because he's not going to believe in, you know, what Stephen Strange is doing, so who knows, he might side with him. Or who knows, maybe a connection to Dormammu. Because Dormammu isn't dead. He's just left. Yeah. So there's always a possibility they'll hook up, like they did in the comics. Mm. But not hook up, you know what I mean, but get together. You know,
right, we're not shipping characters here.
Yeah, I think Chiwetel would make him a more interesting villain. Mm. He's just a better actor.
He was a great one in Serenity. I mean, Serenity, he was just so calm and cool as a bad guy. It was really great. So I'd love to see that kind of chemistry come back for Ragnarok or Infinity War. I think great character.
Absolutely.
And then you have a good setup too. You have the, like, former friends that are now rivals.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would be cool.
So hopefully this just suffers from the typical, like, origin story thing where you have to dump so much of time into it.
I mean, can I just say, too, like, when Stephen Strange, Doctor Strange, he gets in the car accident, they just literally toss everything at him that causes car accidents. He's speeding down a fast highway. It's raining.
He's looking at his phone.
He's snorting cocaine. He's getting a blowjob from a stripper named Cherry. It's like everything that causes car accidents of
Which
that
Which version
magnitude.
Of the film did you watch?
Yeah,
I got the special director's cut, sir.
Yeah. I gotta talk to Scott Garrett to get hooked up. Be like, hang on a second, I gotta pull this woman over. Get out. Okay, I gotta go wreck my car. See you later. By the way, speaking of women characters, I can't help but think Rachel McAdams was kind of wasted as Christine Palmer.
Yeah, oh yeah,
it was nearly enough. You know, he just, like, brushes her off.
They were really good together too, so I hope that, like, that's not the end of her, you know, appearances.
Well, mm-hmm.
It reminds me a lot of, like, in the Thor series
with Natalie Portman.
Yeah, because she was I thought she was really good, and they had, like, a really good rapport, but just, like, completely underused.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of hope that, you know, she'll have that, like, Pepper Pot sort of involvement where she gets involved in the story. I mean, not, you know, turning into the superhuman and destroying the main villain, but still, you know, something along those lines where she starts to get more involved in the story. I hope the next film or whatever film Strange is involved with, she has better involvement.
Yeah,
well, let me ask.
I would imagine, given the star power, that they'll continue these. I mean, it seems like it was a pretty large success.
Mm. Well, let me ask you, because isn't there a connection between Rachel McAdams' character here in Doctor Strange and Rosario Dawson's character in Daredevil?
Yeah, Claire Temple. Apparently, she's also a night nurse at the same station, but I don't think they wanted to go to that crossover yet because the Netflix Marvel stuff is separated from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It would have been a nice nod. It would have been a nice nod, but, you know, I don't think they thought of that. But she's also a night nurse, so.
Because I could have swore that there was a connection between the two of them. And I think I read somewhere about the whole night nurse aspect. And there is a comic book of the night nurses, correct?
Yeah, there is. Let me just take a look at a link here. Entertainment Weekly was talking about this connection and everything like that, and they said that there was a night nurse character, but obviously she didn't do the transformation.
This hospital is overpowered.
People could just warp in. People can just warp in with a problem. I've got the person who's dying. Can you help us? I'm telling you, though. I mean, I really would like to see more out of her character, but the thing I did like is when she got annoyed when he warped in. Like, you gotta be kidding me.
That whole set piece was just so wild.
Yeah. Also,
we're gonna talk about visuals, right?
Oh my god, the visuals in this movie. Let me just say, like, as soon as, like, that whole scene, that very first scene where you see the Ancient One and Calicus, like, fighting in the mirror world, I was like, you know what? Inception is horseshit now. That movie is horseshit right now, because this just won up
that. That movie was made years ago.
I know it was made years ago, but there are still people who love it so much because of those visual effects.
I like the fact that, you know, the evil characters was able to manipulate the world. Like, they were about to run through a portal and he practically just turns it on the side. Next thing you know, they're crashing into a bus with Stan Lee inside. You know,
that was awesome.
That was a great cameo, awesome, by the way.
I think that was my favorite Stan Lee cameo. Because he's reading The Doors of Perception by Aldous Huxley, which is all about, like, LSD use in the 60s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you're just like, this is just so perfect.
Especially the visual effects are amazing. The only thing is, I think the way that they're set up, they might be a little overwhelming in 3D.
I loved it in 3D.
I was watching it in 2D.
It was pretty great in 3D.
We saw IMAX 3D.
Me too.
And we always sit in, like, the first row to get, like, as close to it as possible. And it was freaking awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that whole moment when the Ancient One helps Doctor Strange open his eye, and just that whole full-blown psychedelic sequence with, like, the hands and the...
Oh my god, that's
amazing.
I mean...
He just says, like, I don't believe you, and she just hits him with it. Great.
He's like, teach me, and she's like, no.
No.
No. You know, you have to understand, like, the director of these films, Scott Derrickson, the only other big-budget movie where he worked with a big, elaborate special effects budget was The Day the Earth Stood Still in 2008, the Keanu Reeves remake.
Really?
Other than that, his films have been smaller releases. The Exorcism of Emily Rose, Sinister, Deliver Us from Evil. I mean, he worked on either low-grade horror movies or, you know, a big-budget film, The Day the Earth Stood Still, that nobody cared about, you know, because that remake wasn't much anyway. Right. But this movie, he really establishes a wonderful visual style. I mean, even the smaller things, the cloak, the freaking cloak.
Oh my god, how they did that was fantastic.
Yeah, it was great.
It was great. I mean, when, like, Doctor Strange was putting an eye and started cuddling his face, stop it.
Yeah.
And I just love the attention to detail in that cloak, because it didn't look like, oh, it's a CGI cloak. No, it actually legit looked like it was a cloak that was doing some crazy shit.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I thought the cloak was really cool. It just took forever to introduce it, like about an hour and 15 minutes in. Mm-hmm. But when it finally got introduced, it was cool. Like, it just, like, latched onto the doctor when he walked in. That was, well, when he was walking into the camera thing. That was really cool.
Right, it was kind of like going, hey, wait.
Sure. I'll bet there's going to be a director's cut with, like, 20 more minutes of content.
I'm
cloak. It's going to be cloak
content. Yeah.
The cloak's just going to get its own, like, one-shot cartoon thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, Coulson's going to be questioning it. Okay, cloak, talk to me. Where you going? Come back here.
I'm into it. I'm there.
I mean, overall, you know, the directing style is really well done. I mean, I was really surprised how well Scott Derrickson did with the material. He also co-wrote the screenplay with two other people, too.
Right.
So, and they did a really great job. You know, it's like you always wonder what these directors are going to do with the material at hand. You know, because, like, when Jon Favreau got introduced for the Iron Man, we knew it was in good hands and everything like that. But there were certain doubts with other directors going into certain films, you know. So it's great to see that they did a good job with the material and everything, and they actually made it a fun, spiritual sort of film.
Absolutely, and you know,
especially this deep in, like, the Marvel universe, to be like 2016 and to be, like, introducing really stylish, like, solid new entrance. I don't know. I guess it's pretty common at this point with Guardians and all of the others, but still, I'm impressed when it happens.
Well, I mean, if Marvel knows anything, it's how to introduce new characters. Like, there was all this trouble with Ant-Man a few years ago when Edgar Wright was supposed to be directing it, and instead Peyton Reed took over. But the movie turned out fine. And, like, you know, Doctor Strange and Guardians, it had this little fun, whimsy sense, you know, that light's an ugly-ass dog, you know, or something like that, you know. But it's just great to see that Marvel still pays attention to the little things, introducing characters in the fold while at the same time maintaining what they're doing with their bigger set movies, you know, like Avengers and stuff like that. Civil War, they just really do like a great job balancing that out with the right directors. I mean, like Kevin Feige, he knows what he's doing now, and it's great to see him doing that with all of his team members.
And can I also say too, just like with these Marvel movies, I love seeing films where you can absolutely tell that the actors are having fun in the roles that they're having. And I feel like this is like the first time I've seen like Benedict Cumberbatch look like he's having a full-on blast in any role. Because if you compared like the stuff like in Sherlock and The Imitation Game, and even when he played his version of Khan in Star Trek Into Darkness, he had to be the full-on straight man during all these other roles. And I know there's a little bit of humor in a Sherlock, but for the most part, he's practically serious throughout the entire thing. This is the first time where, from start to finish, for me, that this was like the first time I saw Cumberbatch look like he was just having a ball playing Stephen Strange.
I haven't seen him have fun with a role like this since he was all in Zoolander 2. I am all.
I think I most of us get that.
You don't, just look up the scene. You don't need to see the whole movie. It's horrible. But I am all. And what is all? I am all. Okay. But no, he has such a good time with his role. And like I said, the way he nailed his facial hair and, you know, the expressions of Doctor Strange, I think he's going to be a great addition to this whole Marvel universe. And I want to see him show up in Ragnarok now because of his tie-in. But I have a question about that scene with Thor. I mean, when we let Thor, you know, the Dark World, the second movie, Loki was in charge of Asgard, and Thor was walking away and everything like that. Now, all of a sudden, they're in New York together looking for Odin, and we don't know any of the details on that. Are we going to get that in Ragnarok?
I believe we are. I feel like that this was, like, smack dab in the middle of things.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, Thor did the whole runaround with Loki and the Avengers in the Dark World. You don't trust him. So why would you free him from what a prison and bring him to New York, the city he tried to destroy in the Avengers? I want an explanation.
Well, it's kind of strange. They seem to cut out Thor stuff. I don't know if that's because there's a new Thor movie coming up, but what was the last one where they cut like a number of... They cut like basically the whole Thor
stuff. Oh, yeah, they cut out
a lot
of an Age of Ultron. I think they cut out like 20 minutes of Thor material.
Yeah, I think they're saving it for Ragnarok. I mean, okay. Ragnarok, they're going to pile a whole bunch of stuff involving Thor and the Infinity Stones. It's going to lead into Infinity War. Right, but like I said, I really wish we had gotten a small film in telling us why he broke out Loki, how Loki lost control of Asgard, where Odin went. Because, you know, at the end of the Dark World, we didn't even know where Odin was. If he even got... Well, we only know he got replaced. We didn't know he got whisked away or something. So we're missing stuff from the Dark World, too.
No, that is actually Marvel. Very true.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'd like to hear... I mean, Ragnarok's going to be exciting anyway. Carl Urban, Jeff frickin' Goldblum, in a role he loves, compared to the Independence Day recipients, which is what I call it. Sorry.
I've got to look. I didn't know Jeff Goldblum was in the new one. Who's he playing?
Let me look up the role. But, yeah, he's one of the... I think he's one of the main baddies who's going to be in it. And having him in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is flipping awesome.
And as a villain, he's going to be a good villain.
Yeah, he's going to have a good time with that.
Yeah, he's going to be playing... let's see here. I'm looking up the role. Sorry about that. He is confirmed to be playing the eccentric Grand Master.
Ah, that makes sense. Eccentric.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, and you need to put that Hulk's in there. Hulk's going to be in there, too. And Carl Urban's character is going to be Scourge the Executioner.
Ooh,
one of Asgard's greatest boys. Yeah, I mean, I asked him about it at the Denver Comic Con thing, and he's excited. Yeah. Yeah, he's going to be fun. Yeah, this is going to be a great movie. I just really hope, like I said, it fills in the gaps and tells us what happened with Odin and all that stuff. Because, I mean, like, as great it was to see Thor and the refilling beer glass, by the way, which is amazing. Yeah. And, like, he slurps down a whole bunch of it in one gulp, and all of a sudden, I'm like, I need that glass.
I think we all do need that glass.
We all need that glass. it was just funny, though. I need that glass.
You live in Boston. You don't need that glass. It's around every corner.
Yeah. That is true. But final thoughts on this movie. Like, Doctor Strange, did it live up to the expectations?
I think definitely. But that's because we had zero expectations.
That's a good point. Like, honestly, I think I've only saw one trailer of this movie before I went and saw it. And it was like the teaser.
I think, you know, there was some nervousness there. Like I said, with the director's streak of just dealing with low-grade horror or remakes we don't give a damn about, I was a little bit nervous and everything like that. I was sort of the same way when James Gunn was introduced for Guardians of the Galaxy, despite the fact that, you know, he nailed superhero culture with his movie Super. Go rent it, by the way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, Doctor Strange, the only hints we've really seen outside of comics, we saw his pinball table by Zen Studios, and we saw him in Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3. And, you know, it's really hard to see how that character would translate into like a 2-something-hour movie if you're not familiar with the comics. But I was pleasantly surprised. I thought this was a really great movie. The visual work is probably the most spectacular I've seen since the original Avengers. I think they did a fantastic job with creating mirror worlds and everything like that. Because when I first saw that, everybody else would think the same thing I was. It's Inception Part 2.
Yeah, so
the better version.
I think they did a good job. Yeah, yeah,
it just,
but better.
It takes it to a completely other level, though.
Yeah.
It went beyond that.
Oh, you know, all right, we didn't... I have to bring it back, because I don't think I've ever seen this in a movie where they're doing the reverse time fight scene, where the reality is moving in reverse, but they're moving forward.
I was impressed by that sequence.
That was crazy how they did that.
I've never seen anything like that. That was definitely, like, stepping it up to another level.
I really thought it was great. I mean, just like, you know, trapping the villain in that wall when it was rebuilding was really cool. Or the fish tank.
Yeah, the fish tank
was awesome.
Yeah, there was so many visual things that, and just like so much creativity with that stuff. Yeah,
there's so much detail. It was amazing.
And I mean, I, and the fact that it ties in and still keeps that Marvel audience. Like, it made $84.9 million in its weekend. So it, you know, it's right up there with some of the other great, you know, Marvel movies like Ant-Man and stuff like that. It's not as high as Guardians, but it still did very well for its debut. And worldwide, it's already made $325 million. So,
wow.
You know, we're going to see more Doctor Strange. Yeah, I mean, it opened worldwide a week ago, and I was pissed. I'm like, why do they get them overseas before we do? What's up with that? But I thought it was, you know, a really great film, and it's great to see that, you know, it's business as usual for Marvel, and we're going to see a tremendous tie-in with his character in futures. I really hope, you know, Cumberbatch continues to have fun with the role.
As do I.
Us too.
Yeah, definitely.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up, by the way, indeed.
I am disappointed with one thing that we during my screening, I did not see a new trailer for Guardians 2. I saw the one online, but I thought we'd get like a full-fledged one with the movie.
Yeah,
did you guys go in?
Yeah.
I got another Fantastic Beasts trailer, which does look good. I'm excited about Fantastic Beasts.
It'll be fun, but I mean, I'm just a little nervous that they're going to try to, you know, create Harry Potter lightning in a bottle again. I mean, that's why the movie's coming out, but it'll be fun.
Yeah.
I just really wanted to see a Guardians 2 trailer where Kurt Russell shows up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
he's the man. He's the man.
Ours was the third trailer, I think, but yeah, it was good.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I mean,
everyone was going crazy. Everyone was going crazy for, of course, the Rogue One trailer.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. That was the other one they showed, too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Rogue... Well, obviously, you know, it's Disney. You know, they're gonna attach those things together as often as they can. Maybe that's where we'll get the Guardians trailer, with the Rogue One movie.
That's what I'm thinking. Actually, I think I read that someplace, that it's going to be attached to that one.
I hope so. I think that'll be really great. Although, I did like the Wonder Woman trailer. I have hope for that one, even though it has a few Captain America First Soldier comparisons.
Did you get that in the theater? Because I haven't seen the new one yet.
It's pretty good. I mean, you know, Gal Gadot, I can look at her all day, not gonna lie. But, you know, she's doing fantastic stuff with Wonder Woman. I she was actually one of my favorite parts of Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice. Her character was so much fun. So, yeah, giving her own movie, I do have high hopes for it. But, you know, then again, I kind of had high hopes for Batman vs. Superman, so we'll see.
Yeah.
Oh, DC's trying. At least DC's trying. They're trying to establish their own universe. It's not going to be anywhere close to Marvel's, but they're trying. I thought Suicide Squad was kind of fun. But, you know, a lot of people were all like, oh, is this all we get? You know, that sort of thing. So maybe they're just so used to Marvel's high level of quality that anytime they see a DC product that doesn't live up to it, oh, it's shit.
The bar is pretty high at this point.
Yeah, the bar is pretty high.
Yep.
Absolutely. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining me here on this episode of No Borders, No Race. And why don't we do some little shameless plugs from both of you? And let's start with Bright Primate, since you guys haven't been on the show for a really long time.
Oh, for us? I don't know. We're still suffering through Rain World. That should be out early next year, though.
Yay!
Yeah, exactly. Finally! It's like year five, so my enthusiasm for talking about it is pretty low.
I'm sorry. DCD.
No, you can find me at twitter.com/theDCD. You can find me on the ARG podcast every week over there at retrozap.com. And you can find my work at wwg.com and maroonersrock.com. Not upset, but thank you for thinking of me, Evan.
Not a problem.
Not upset.
A pleasure, gentlemen.
A pleasure.
Thank you guys so much for joining me, or having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
catch you guys on the internet.
Coming up, we've got Kristen Hirsch, better known as the front woman for Throwing Muses and 50 Foot Wave. She just released a new 2-disc album and book combo called Wyatt at the Coyote Palace. Here's one of the songs from that album. It's called Diving Bell.
Your lungs and
Ciel with Good Luck My Way from 2012's Butterfly album. The band's getting involved with the upcoming release of Resident Evil 7 Biohazard via a new PlayStation VR music video for their song, Don't Be Afraid. That video is due to be released later this month. Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, or if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can follow me on Twitter at king_baby_duck, on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, on Twitch on twitch.tv/omnistreetinc, and on the J-pop, video games, and anime amino pages at kingbabyduckesh. Like us on facebook.com/bostonbastardbrigade and on facebook.com/landofesh. And don't forget about all the other sites under the Land of Ash, including The Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, Smashed Rook, and Nerd Crave. Promotional consideration for this week's tracks from The History of Color TV, Chore, and Kristen Hirsch, made by Shameless Promotion PR. If you're looking for some fine, under-the-radar artists who might be one day emerging from the indie depths, please be sure to check out Shameless Promotion's artist lineup. You might be surprised by what you find. Let's check in with Jonathan Fleming to see what's happening on this Thursday's Wicked Anime. Now, you've got something special planned, right?
Yes, thank you, Evan. The next episode of the Wicked Anime Podcast is the most specialist podcast episode we've ever recorded. Join the original cast of the Wicked Anime Podcast, plus Cat from Nerdy Show, as we play the tabletop RPG Maid. You'll find us playing cute anime stereotype housemaids as we all try to win the affection of the housemaster, aka the DM. For any of our longtime listeners, I can promise you it's probably one of the most absurd things we have ever done. So yeah, you'll want to listen. Back to you, Evan.
Thank you, Jonathan. And I do hope you check that episode out, folks. I've personally never played Maid before, but it sounds like it's the sort of RPG card game that'd be right up my alley. Also, tune in hopefully this Thursday for another episode of One-on-One with our first ever returning musical guest and pals, Skinny Lister. Looking forward to seeing those guys again. We're going to end the show with a new track from electronic group Wednesday Campanella, who just released an iTunes exclusive single, Super Kid. From that release is a B-side called Kamehameha Dial. And until next time, this is your King Baby Duck, reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps.
Saṅgara sushiteru, ase kaite kita.
This is Evan Borgo from the Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race podcast. What you hear each week on our show is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed something from this week's selections, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, or your local record store to help give these artists your support. We always give our readers and listeners the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun. So if something resonated with you, give that album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help to bring your favorite J-pop artist one step closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.